Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. This is episode 143 for us. We are going to take our usual slow ramp up to get everybody here on board and excited to talk about our topic today, the real cost of tribal knowledge, why losing your people can bring ops to a standstill. This is a conversation that we've actually danced around a few times at different coffee hours, talking about how important it is to work with our staff and capture knowledge, create processes, move away from gray work. And I'm really excited to have Bob Salai here with us today as our expert. And we're just going to give it a few more minutes to everybody joins. I actually clicked the go live button a little bit earlier than usual just to see what would happen. It's always fun to mess around with LinkedIn and make sure everything's working before you get started. But really happy to see you here. Folks, say hello in the comment stream. Steve, thank you for getting that started. And do want to hear your thoughts and your questions around knowledge management, around knowledge sharing, and how we create processes. Hi, Kristen. It's good to see you again. Hi, David. Kristen and I saw each other just a couple weeks ago. Kristen, I'm going to be right near you. It's oddly, I'm going to text you later on my drive back from Tucson, Arizona, back to San Diego. So, Valabab, good to see you. And everybody, just say hello in the comment stream. This is an event I love to see people participating in, especially this week. We're talking about the real cost of tribal knowledge, why losing your best people can bring ops to a standstill. And for everybody's knowledge, today's episode is sponsored by QuickBase. QuickBase is an AI-powered operations platform that is designed specifically for your unique processes, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. For those of you who are long-term watchers and participants, you know we had a really interesting conversation, I think it was 2 or 3 months ago, about the problems with SaaS sprawl and all these point solutions, the hundreds of different applications that exist in many enterprises, and the impact of those. And now today we're almost talking about the opposite of this. What happens when we don't have processes? What happens when we don't have documentation? And over time, it becomes a debt to the organization. We cannot easily onboard people. We can't easily improve processes because you talk to one person and they know their little bit of what's going on and so forth. So today we're talking about the real cost of tribal knowledge, why losing your people can bring ops to a standstill. I want to start with just an overall discussion around the knowledge management challenge and get some thoughts from everybody around what are some of the technical, operational, and cultural barriers that prevent knowledge management from happening. I'm going to start with Bob. Bob is our expert from QuickBase. Bob, it's good to have you here. And just tell us a little bit about what you do at QuickBase and then share your thoughts around some of the challenges around knowledge management from a technical, operation, and cultural perspective. Welcome, Bob.
Yeah. Thank you, Isaac. And thank you to everyone here for joining us here today. It's really exciting. Thank you for having me back, by the way. It's always a pleasure here to join and to talk through this. And tribal knowledge, it's always been really the hot topic, I think, in my career. Just to kind of go back, really, I'm a principal industry advisor here at QuickBase, primarily for the construction industry. And really, my career has spanned around lean, continuous improvement, starting off in manufacturing, going to Wesco Distribution for electrical distributing. But really for the last decade in construction have been leading up innovation teams to kind of really look at their processes and how are they rolling out digital solutions for not just the office, but also the field kind of going into this. So quite often focus a lot on lean continuous improvement, but use tools like QuickBase to help fill in those gaps and really kind of bring a lot of innovation to life in real time. And that's really, I think I've seen a big change for it. So I see a bunch of hands being raised here. I want to give everyone a chance, but just to kind of like kick us off and talk through maybe one of the instances, because culture, tech, operational, There's a lot in each one of those. And culture, I think, is the one that I really, really wanted to kind of just speak to first. Really, I think before we even talk about like tribal knowledge and stuff like that, I'm kind of curious on the organization if they're primed to receive feedback. Basically, what is the culture at its heart? And are they open to receiving feedback? Or are the employees feeling reluctant to kind of give their ideas for fear that either it might be misconstrued as complaining, or maybe they've actually done it quite a lot of times and it just goes on deaf ears and no changes begin to occur. So what happens a lot of times is that power is knowledge type of mentality and they begin to hold on. So that's something that I've seen across the board with a lot of organizations and curious from the rest of the group and panel, other areas there if they're seeing that as well.
That's a really interesting point, Bob. I never thought of it in that order, that you have people who are willing to volunteer information, who want to share feedback, want to improve things. And then over time, when they see management isn't responding to that feedback, they just stop talking and they just do their own things. I never actually thought of
Yes.
it that way. Let's bring Martin in. Martin, have you seen it? Have you seen that progression, or like where does it start from? What's the underlying problem that prevents organizations from really creating a culture and processes and technical capabilities to share knowledge? Welcome back, Martin.
Hi, good to be here again. I think there's a couple of different things. I agree, culture is a big part of this. If I think back to some of my days in large organizations, and part of my background is Ford Motor Company, I was there for many years. And there's a couple of things I remember from some of those aspects of where people, some of it's change fatigue as well, because they see so much change, so they just kind of get fed up of it and don't want to share stuff. So there's
Right.
too many initiatives kind of drives that, and it's that cultural thing as well. But there's also that fear thing. The whole knowledge is power. The person that's been doing it for so many years has all of this knowledge about how it's done, and they're scared about actually sharing some of that knowledge in case they're no longer needed. And I think that's a mentality definitely for the maybe the older generations. That are out there, maybe not so much true with some of the later generations coming through. In my experience, others may, disagree with that. But I think it's kind of that whole thing around trying to help people to understand that for the good of the overall organization, and it will actually help their job be easier as well. So kind of it's change management 101 forms a big part of that whole knowledge sharing.
Martin, I think you bring up a good point about change fatigue and overload of information. I think that it's almost like there's too many voices in the room, right? And it creates this atmosphere of when do I get to speak up and when do I get to share? But I think this, I'm kind of interested, Derek, what you see here. I told a story in Digital Trailblazer about walking into a broken ETL process. And when I went dis trying to discover what the root cause was, I found a stack of code that took an entire brick of paper to print out. And I did that to go back to my management team and said, look, it's going to take us a long time to unravel years and years of engineering work that now only one person in the organization needs understands how it works in this stream of undocumented code. We've all seen this before. So Derek, what have you seen as, some of the technical and operation and cultural barriers that prevent knowledge sharing from happening?
Yeah, and you're spot on with the code based stuff. I've actually seen it in industries where, people are doing code, they're developers on site, and all of a sudden they leave, and only to find out that they were knowledge hoarding. So they were holding the code, they did not document it properly, they didn't document how different scripts were written and why they were written. So instead of the one person now having to go back and try to figure out what's going on, it took several people to try to go back and figure out what's going on, which again is going to delay progress in the companies, can delay efficiency, and as far as it's going to extend the amount of money that company can generate revenue-wise, because now they have to go back and fix a product that they thought they had access to when they realized they don't. I feel the lack of awareness with security associated with that is the biggest point, because there weren't enough security measures put in place to not allow that from a cultural barrier point of view. I look at other things when you talk about operational barriers. These become single points of failure. When you have a key person holding on to certain information that's undocumented, it affects different things down the road. Vendor relationships, it affects contractor relationships. All these things are ripple effect across the organization, which cripple the organization in that particular sector, or maybe overall. These are kind of things that we need to figure out. And the other thing I've seen, there's not enough cross training. One of the things I focus on when I go into organizations is like, I need to make sure the top level person knows what the bottom level person, and the bottom level knows what the person below them. So if one person should be out for any reason, the show doesn't stop. The show continues to go on. And this is important for the continuity aspect to make sure there are no barriers to entry when need to do things like that. But the other thing I look at too is just the, poorly integrated security tools are not actually addressing these things across the board. If they're doing it properly, they should be catching these things and labeling documentation, see how it, and those people that are looking at sending information to their personal devices as opposed to using business devices, that was not a big thing I saw in a lot of different areas. And it was okay because they didn't have the proper systems in place to track it. And when you look at that across the board, it just creates multiple barriers for management to kind of keep up because they don't know, one, it exists, and then, two, they don't know what they need to do to fix it immediately.
Spot on, Derek. There's also a comment here from Vaibhav in the comment stream. He says, I think it needs to be top down driven. Liz, why are we so bad about this governance? I mean, whether it's security or operations or code, an end-to-end process, I mean, why aren't leaders demanding that we have good documentation before we deploy?
Well, I mean, why aren't leaders demanding more documentation? I mean, I'm going to say something really simple, and that's because they're cheap. They want it now. They want it yesterday. They want it fast. They don't want to spend any more money. And like documentation is seen as some, basically a waste of money. It's, it's a barrier to, revenue in some ways, overhead. What they don't see is that it's actually, if they don't do it, what it's going to cost them in terms of risk and maintenance long term. I mean, I'm going to talk about something that's really basic, which is, an ounce of prevention is organizing your documentation. People have spoken multiple times on this call already about knowledge hoarders and, people in fear of losing their jobs and, all kinds of things like that. But really just having basically organizational of your documentation so that people know where to find things. I love what Derek said about cross training and making sure that you have redundancy or at least, some kind of succession planning so people know who's second in command if somebody is, God forbid, hit by a bus or out sick or whatever. But knowing where the documentation is huge, just knowing where it is. And nowadays, we should be thinking about implementing small language models so that we could drill into our documentation very easily. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to find things super quickly if somebody is out sick. So I'm a big believer in making sure that everything is not only well documented, but really easy to find.
Liz, I'm going to disagree with you in one aspect. All right. And then we're going to let Joanne mediate this. I don't think leaders see it as a waste of money. I think what happens with leaders is, documentation and process creation is essentially an investment for the future. Right. And a lot of them are forced to think short-term benefit, which you brought up, and are forced to think through what all the stakeholders are asking them to do and trying to get as much in there. And so they don't make that investment in the future. I think part of the issue, and I'm kind of interested in Joanne's perspective on this, part of the issue is we ask for too much complexity in our implementations, right? We need, and we have too much over-engineering of our requirements. We have too much over-engineering of our applications. I think as we start heading into agents and small language models, I think there's a risk of that happening another round of this where we wanted to do 100 things instead of doing 10 things well. And that drives either a complexity of process, data, or implementation, and sort of looking for, let me just say, lower codey ways of doing things, where the natural expression of what you're building is self-documenting. Joanne, I'm kind of interested in your opinion. This, it's not worth it, or are we just doing too many things wrong up front that make and create this operational and technical and cultural barrier around knowledge management?
I think we're doing it wrong.
There it is.
And I
There's
tell
that
people,
mic drop I told everybody.
yeah.
which, oh, I, you know, I mean, I wrote a very, call it a book, several years ago now, on knowledge management for the Conference Board of Canada. And one of the things that I sort of put out there was we have to look at knowledge transfer and knowledge management as in a different way than we currently do, which, from the IT perspective, it's about documentation, but it's really not. It's about community. It's about getting people over the notion of if you don't keep your knowledge to yourself, you're going to lose your job, and rather make it about the idea that knowledge sharing is the same as learning. And if we're continually learning, we're continually growing, and that brings benefit to everyone. So if you look at it from the what's in it for me kind of thing and change the culture and incentivize people to share their knowledge, you're going to have a different mindset that approaches it from the get-go. So that could be leadership saying, hey, we're aware that like in manufacturing now, 33% of the workforce is going to retire in the next 2 years. Oh, gee, we have to pay attention to this. How do we make sure that the tribal knowledge, or rather more appropriately termed institutional knowledge, is valued as an asset and does not walk out the door with the people who are retiring? Because then we're really going to be SOL when we need a fix from somebody. Think about a maintenance engineer or someone in a factory who can walk down a line and knows just by the sound of the machine that something is wrong with it because they've been doing it for 25 or 30 or 40 years. That knowledge needs to be transferred to someone else. And the way to do that really depends on how you incentivize the individuals, how your culture allows for that incentivization, whether it's, a gamification or a reward system or a, hey, you get a gift card from Amazon, or whatever it is. How that starts to flow should be much more conversational. And to your point about agents and agentic AI, absolutely. You can look at the prompts that people use. You can store the data that's in the prompt and the data that is returned by the system as part of that knowledge management platform, and then use it to inform learning systems, inform training systems, and also take it even one step farther and inform leadership about, did you know that these people are really, really subject matter experts in a way that you don't expect them to be? In other words, let's get away from the code and away from the paper and the documentation and have a system that allows people to contribute with an incentive, without fear. Agents can do that.
I would have I since you're good going contrary to my conversation about being cheap, I would have to I'm going to come back and say, first of all, Isaac, I think that what you said about more complexity versus simple is actually exactly the same point as I made, that they would rather invest in complexity than in documentation. So it's actually the same comment as I made. But when it comes to what Joanne said, which is amazing, I would love to have that major culture change. It's almost impossible to pull off. So in a situation where you get steering that Titanic away from the iceberg, what can you do? And I would say organizing your documentation and getting it to the point where you can actually find things and is at least something that's tactical that you can do in a short term.
So I want to bring this conversation into two industries that are really important around this, right? Because we're talking When I think about the industrial applications in construction and manufacturing, technically lagging industries, for the most part, we're not talking about digital experiences and workflows. We're talking about hands-on equipment. There are safety issues with that. These, for the most part, are slower changing industries in terms of best practices. There's a lot of built-up institutional knowledge around how to hang drywall, how to pour cement, and things like that. So I want to bring this into this fold of real-world problems. This is not just a knowledge-sharing problem. This is how do we continue to build our expertise, and how do we build processes and use tools to do more of the work that is in the physical world. Bob, I want to bring you back and then go to Joe, John,
Yeah.
and Martin after that. Bob, talk to me about the construction manufacturing fields. What are we most concerned about when we think about losing people and the knowledge that we're trying to retain with them?
Yeah, absolutely. And Joanne, I think you hit on a story that is all too really familiar with the construction industry, right? But there's a point here that I just want to kind of take one step back on. And it's just been out there because when we think about the term tribal knowledge, the very first thing that I've been asked to in a multitude of organizations is labor shortage. Let's prepare for retirement. Let's go out and talk to the foreman. Let's go talk to the office personnel and let's start documenting processes. But I also don't want to forget, this is not an age conversation. This is not about
No.
just the retirement. This is about your tribal knowledge of really the people and bringing it, Isaac, to this point. Construction is starting to move forward with a lot of innovation around prefabrication and VDC and a whole bunch of models, digital twins, et cetera. If you lose those people who have tribal knowledge, irregardless of age, and you're not documenting in SOPs or whatever else you might have with that, you're going to be impacted by it. And so when I think about construction, obviously our minds go to the foreman who can walk around and through smell and touch know exactly the percent complete of that particular job and where it's going to be. But let's also not forget about the innovation that's occurring extremely rapidly, and that it's all about this culture, no matter where you're at in terms of your tenure at the company overall.
Let's bring in some more expertise around this. Joe, manufacturing and construction, long time working in this space. How do we change a culture, process, technology in a place where, like Bob said, there's a lot of innovation coming?
I think you have to address some myths, and there's a certain cultural arrogance in employees who say, "I just know how to do this," or "It's too hard to explain. It's too complicated. You'll never understand." You know, the fact is, we had in one instance, we had an ETL process that took more than 24 hours. And it had been built and managed by one individual over a number of years. And so it was sort of sacrosanct. This individual knew it, no one else knew it, and everyone was afraid to touch it because if you broke it, the company would grind to a halt. If you bring in some young talent and you explain what this process is supposed to do, and you reinvent it, and it runs in near real time, you have solved a huge problem. So no one has knowledge that is completely unassailable or irreplaceable. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two is there's a cultural arrogance at the industry level. You know, I worked for a construction company and they lived on a report called an anticipated cost report. I then went to the reinsurance industry, and at a meeting there was a conversation about IBNR. And I had no idea what IBNR stood for, and even less knowledge about how you would create this thing. So I stopped and asked, "What are you guys talking about? Explain this to me." And fundamentally, it was the ACR report. It was exactly the same concept. So, you know, two notions. No one has knowledge that can't be deciphered or replaced in some way, shape, or form. I'm sure somebody out there is going to invent an agentic system that sort of becomes your apprentice and learns and replicates your processes, right, Joanne?
Yes,
And
sir. And as far as, industry uniqueness, I see this particularly in the hiring process. If you haven't worked in pharmaceuticals, you can't work in pharmaceuticals. I call BS on that. They all face fundamentally the same issues on a technology front. Yes, there are some nuances, I admit it, but there's a lot of commonality.
Thank you, Joe. Let's bring John in and Martin. We're talking today about losing people and working through tribal knowledge. And I love this cultural arrogance versus learning culture. I love this idea of industry jargon as a killer of culture. Bring us down to earth, John. Why are we having such a hard time when we get into agile teams and development teams and we're building applications out, we're building agents out? I had some developers who would tell me the code itself is documentation. I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah, and I agree with almost everything that's been said today, but the place that I think really has a lot of the blame is the management. And I haven't heard enough of the criticism of the management, which is first off, if you're gonna have people tell people to do documentation, like unless if you're not gonna go out and audit it, you really don't know if the documentation is good. And so what I've seen in companies that are really healthy, my last company, we did light manufacturing. Light assembly. We would keep track of what people had what skills. We would test all the skills on a yearly basis. We would keep track of like what business processes people can do, and we would have people do different business processes over time. That would allow us to have people who are a lot more fungible, and we would systematically keep track of like the skills that people had in a database, and we would have people rate themselves, and we'd have the managers review it on a yearly basis. And we'd look to see like when somebody left, what kind of skills are walking out the door. And so I agree with everything that people said, but like if you want to have good knowledge management, like there's a ton of responsibility that goes to the management team. They have to make sure that different people are doing things, that people are cross-trained. They have to audit the documentation. They have to have people that are unfamiliar with something run through the documentation. And if you do those types of things, you're going to be a lot better set up if bad things happen in your organization.
Martin, you get the mic, but you're going to have to answer my question. Everybody's pointing the finger at management, and you sat in the seat of CIO. You felt the pressure. You still sit in that seat. You feel the pressure to deliver and improve. And how do you handle this knowledge transfer culture, teaching, learning, documentations, process cleanup, all the things that make us more operational resilient, and I'm throwing this out so that Derek can also comment on it. All these things, and we're not doing it as leaders.
Right. Well, I think there's I mean, two examples and then a kind of a CIO perspective as well. So two examples, both come from the manufacturing world. And one is kind of a contrary to Joanne's point earlier about incentivizing people to share knowledge. So I was involved in a company and there was a team of four people, three senior analysts, one manager, and they had been looking after this specific system, a very important system, for 15 plus years as a team. And there was significant issues of groupthink as they thought and acted as one body, the four of them. They were all heading towards retirement age and they did things their way. And everybody above, more senior management, thought everything was fine because the system ran every day, there was no issues, etc. All four of them took an early retirement package and left on 31st of December one year. That system didn't run properly again for 3 months because instead of actually fixing things, they spent all of their time daily tweaking the data so it ran, so sorting out small issues with the data rather than the system actually dealing with anomalies, rather than fixing root cause and things like this. So they were not interested in sharing knowledge. However much anyone incentivized, that was their way of doing things. There was no interest. How you can incentivize them as much as you like, it wasn't going to change. This was their world, this is how they did things. So that's kind of one example of where things, yeah, that cultural thing don't always give you an answer.
I love that story, Bart. I just do.
So after somebody else came in and they reworked some of the system, made changes, the system ran with half a head looking after it forevermore with very few problems. So they kind of just that kind of where they weren't letting the knowledge out. So just a kind of a great example.
Martin, is the lesson learned here like, it, you know, worst case, you're going to have 3 months of pain when the people leave, or is the worst, or is the lesson here like management has to get into the weeds a little bit and see how things are being fixed?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much management could get into the weeds because they close the doors around them. Yeah. And keep in mind, their manager was part of that group. It wasn't just the analysts. It was the analysts and their manager. So the outward facing thing, everyone was rosy.
I think that the words you used here, this notion of groupthink as a barrier. I mean, that's what I would be smelling for as the leader saying, have they, you know, has this group created its own, island of knowledge, island of operation, you know, they know how things work. Nothing goes out of this wall. And if you start sensing that, maybe you do have to get in the weeds and get involved with this. Heather, I'm going to, and Derek, I'm going to bring you back in just a second. I just want to welcome everybody to our conversation this week around tribal knowledge and why losing your best people can bring ops to a standstill. Fantastic conversation around manufacturing and construction in particular about the culture, processes and technology. We're going to talk a little bit more about people and technology next in our second half, and just stay tuned to learn more from this great group of folks talking about where we need to lead our teams differently around simplifying and creating knowledge for our subject matter experts. Today's episode is brought to you by QuickBase. QuickBase makes it simple to bring together all your data and teams into one centralized place. With QuickBase, you can collect and connect critical data from various sources into one location, create automated workflows based on your existing business processes, and get real-time visibility into what's happening on the front line. Customers use QuickBase for a variety of use cases like asset management, quality and process improvement, and field service management. I want to thank QuickBase and Bob Salai for joining us today as our speaker from there, talking about knowledge management, process reengineering, and our steps to get toward AI. Bob, I want to bring you back in and talk about this because you said, look, the technology is changing rapidly in the industrial space. We're moving from industry 4.0 to 5.0. We're bringing AI in, and our AI is only as good as our knowledge. So let's talk about some of the opportunities to close the knowledge gaps with technology and to better support the AI initiatives that are going to bring that culture together instead of separating the culture out.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing really the technology kind of move us into another era of really how do we use AI to look at our entire process, not just the data. And so we talked a lot on this call really from the very beginning about standard operating procedures. And I could almost spend an entire 4 hours just speaking to that because that's really the foundational thing of auditing the process. And I forget exactly who brought that up. Quite frankly, just to kind of camp on that instance for one part, everybody goes in and says, let's go create a standard operating procedure. And it's almost like checking a box. In the moment we create that document, it's almost kind of a myth. It goes into the ether and no one actually ever pulls it out again because no one's auditing it. So I use QuickBase to actually create an application so that we can actually have the dates and lessons learned of what is actually occurring with that SOP on a regular basis in terms of one instance, so that you are actually going out and you're setting a time frame of 6 months, 9 months, whatever it is, to keep your operations up to date. Because management may not have the time to go into every single process, right? But we need to start using this technology to funnel the data into a centralized location using QuickBase. You think about that for your estimating department. You're capturing all the standard operating procedures for that. and you're going through all this time and effort for it just to die on a vine, but all of this information has to come back into one instance to educate our language models, to educate how we actually use AI to audit the process and find the gaps that aren't documented at the end of the day. So it's going to help out with ramping up, but to me, it's all about really that auditing and keeping your language models up to date.
I love this comment here from Vaibhav on the comment stream. He asks that as a question, is it a good idea to identify all legacy applications and take modernization project for the same on top priority? I'm going to switch his words around. I'm going to say it is a good idea to identify. Yes, this is exactly what we want to be doing. And I love this idea of an, you know, kind of a lineage or an audit log of learning. One of the things I'm always concerned about when we talk about AI is, you know, is the data you're feeding dated, and does it know how to think about right. what's new and important versus what's aged and outdated? And really important when you think about operations, and you think about field, and you think about construction, where so much of the type of work that we're doing is changing all the time. Heather, welcome to the floor. You're our people person. Lots of things are changing around us. And we're trying to create a culture where people are simplifying and using technology and using AI to do that. I just want to, where are your thoughts going on this today?
Well, a couple of things. And one thing that I want, a lot that I agreed with, one thing I'm going to take issue with is that it's not about an age thing. I do think it's a generational thing, that the way people that have been doing work for 25 years, it's generational. They've been doing it that way for so long that they don't want to share it. And I think that concept of being afraid is brilliant. How do you counteract that? Is you celebrate them. You bring them together, make it comfortable, give them a psychological safe space where they can talk about those stories, and you capture those stories. And from that, you can take document things. And certainly the technology is there to do the documentation. The process is there for the documentation, but you still have to collect the information. And so much of it will happen in their war stories, in highlighting their successes and their failures, and being able to quantify and identify where those different steps are. So I think that, and the newer, younger generation will be able to do that. The technology is very familiar to them. It's not familiar to the older person, but they can talk and they can share those stories. And if they're given that opportunity, it can be there. And having them realize that this is just the first step, because so much of what knowledge, my background has been in research, and as soon as something's written, it's old. So that documenting the ongoing and yes, and auditing, all that's important, but it has to be in real time. It has to be all the time. It has to be a dashboard that's shoved in your face that says, today, this is what happened. Yesterday, this is what happened. What can we do to fix this? So I think that has to be really emphasized. And it is a question of a cultural shift. Wherever it's going to start, and it can't be just in one place. You know, it has to be a pervasive feeling that this company, whatever company it is and whatever industry it is, that you're being able to say to people, we are changing. You are part of this change. You're not going to lose your job. Don't be afraid. This is, let's move this forward together. And once that happens, and then you can deal with those succession plans, and you can deal with the real-time support, and you can be real, deal with the compliance, so things aren't left to chance. I saw an article that just said you can't leave it to betting on the way things are going to be, and you're right, you can't.
Heather, I agree with you. I do like the word generational issue, not an age thing. Because when you look at the younger generation, we tend to use a different word. We call it a hero culture, right? The person who has figured out, has developed something, has created something, and left it in such a state that she or he is the only person who can come in and fix it. And it goes back to Martin's story, right? Who's being brought in and how are they actually fixing things? They're not fixing things in a way that others can contribute. And I think that's all about not necessarily documenting things the way we think of in the past, right? I still have books in my attic of the documentation guide for software that I created. I use it as like a memoir. We don't need 400-page documents, what we do need is people to log their decisions, for people to share an insight, to teach others. Derek, you're in the security space. I mean, like, knowing how to solve a particular problem when it comes up again, is not about creating a massive folder of operating procedures and security.
No, you're right. And the part of the problem is understand that you have a problem. I think that's the first thing you're looking at. But just to kind of go back and then looking at the challenges you mentioned before, you know, when you're talking about the risk areas, the two that I see are third-party risk and supply chain cybersecurity risk. These are some of the most prevalent ways people have been breached because of lack of consistency going across the board, just accessing who has access to the data. And when you look at this and bring it forward and you talk about addressing these gaps, you know, we go back even further, we talk about the documentation. Well, artificial intelligence and the innovation artificial intelligence is only going to take that data that's been properly marked and accessible and make it audible. You can make it automated. And if you don't have good data, you're not going to have access to data because, you know, with artificial intelligence, you're going to have to train these systems to work with these automated tools to pull that documentation. I also look at things working with, you know, just the automated tools you're going to need to have in place now for the tribal knowledge. And how do you close the gap? Having these tools that manage the threat associated with data and the tribal knowledge is being lost, or being these dispersed systems, how to pull them all together so they can be unified. These are things that we need to be happening at an enterprise level. And those good with management. Management has to identify, I've got a problem. I need to fix this. How am I going to do that? What systems do I need to put in place? I'll kind of look at these knowledge gaps and graphs to show who's doing what? What are dependencies? How do I visualize this, as mentioned by Heather, with a dashboard of some sort to show these are the things I have. These are the risks associated with the things I don't have. How do I bring it all together? So it really is going to be looking at how to pull it all together, how I'm going to manage it from a governance and a policy point of view. You know, all these things come to remind you now. You mentioned about, you know, the documentation and the amount of documentation, what is considered too much. And I agree with you, 400-page documents or anything is going to be too much. But if I can automate it and assign accountability to it and assign roles and access to it based on certain individuals, it's going to make it a whole lot easier to manage across the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think this is about giving people tools where they can share snippets. You know, yeah. What did you learn today? How did you solve that problem? You know, what went into deploying this feature? What was the change that you did in the operation to make this work better? You know, I think about all these, I think of it as a small problem of sharing that knowledge. And I'm looking at AI to my rescue of being able to look at all the contributions people are making into these knowledge databases and saying, you know, now help me discern this into a storyline, help me query it. This goes back to something Liz had said earlier. Martin, where are we going with this? You know, the reason I ask this is because I just do feel there's a moat there, you know, going back to what Bob said, that if we don't find a way to have really strong in real time, up-to-date information about what we're doing in our operations, it's going to really be hard to put AI in place now that it's becoming more accessible and at some point more affordable for industries like manufacturing and construction to take advantage of it.
So I'm going to take you to the manufacturing floor, and this is kind of building on an example I've used in the past. So you've got a maintenance engineer in a manufacturing plant, and they're walking the line. And they have a head-up display, an augmented reality display, that is showing them information about the equipment they're looking at. And that information is coming from lots of different sources. It's coming from SOPs. So I'll go to where Bob was going with SOPs, small language models of all the data we have, manufacturing information coming from sensors on the actual equipment. It's coming from the actual equipment manufacturer themselves, providing maintenance routines and other data like that. So a person can be looking at a piece of equipment and seeing how it's operating. Let's say they need to do some maintenance work on that piece of equipment. They're looking at and be able to bring up the previous maintenance history of that equipment. They're able to bring up and show them on the head-up display they're wearing the actual maintenance steps. So the SOP, the steps to actually change a bearing or whatever it might be, or they're actually able to then. So we're taking it from the data that's captured from various sources being brought together using the latest technology, using a small language model, using AI, using your SOPs, using the data to help the person actually conduct the task. So it's funneling everything down to just what the person needs to do. And just kind of, I sometimes think it's very good to make some of these things real in terms of this is actually how it can work.
I love that picture. I even love it in multiple, use cases other than just maintenance. I'm thinking about putting that AR display on somebody who's learning what equipment is on the shop floor and how it works, and what the different functions it does. So I think it's a learning tool. I think it can be a management tool as well to see how things are performing and where things are having quality or performance issues. I think there's a lot we can do as we're using tools to collect data and then using AI and using display technologies to bring it right to the people who are working on the floors or in the field. Hey, John.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I love what I'm hearing, and I agree. If you want to have better documentation, you got to improve the tools to make it easier for people to submit information in, log tickets on the documentation. I was talking to a guy that he works for one of the large car companies, and I saw his jacket, and I was asking about it. And he said he loves that company because management listens to people. And he said that every time he finds an issue with the documentation or he finds a better way to fix something, he writes it up. And if it gets accepted, he gets $300 to $1,000. And so that's like such an amazing thing for him that people actually listen to him. And then he's so happy to get the money. The other thing that happens is that if you can put your steps, like put your repair guides in electronic format, take a look at what people are looking. And so you can look to see if people have recently looked at that thing. And so we were at a company, we found that it's really hard to diagnose things, but once you know you diagnose it, it's easy to fix because the repair guides are real good. And so we were keeping track of which steps did people do. And what was the success or failure of those? And we were able to look at and get the basically by doing machine learning on the repair guides and the steps that people were taking and the success or failure of those, we were able to really improve the repair guides and serve up kind of dynamically what people should be doing for diagnostic steps. And so if you invest in better tools, the documentation gets better. And if you incent people and treat people well and listen to them, the stuff gets better too, and that improves culture. And then they actually, if management listens to them, a lot of good things happen.
I think you talk about better tools and incentives. I love this $300 to $1,000 bonus for recommending process changes. Joanne, you've worked in this space. You have a startup in this space, it's all about process and data and culture of sharing. Where do you want to leave us today, Joanne?
Where I want to leave you is with 2 points. If I take Martin's example, that he was just relating about the heads-up display, the one thing that I did not hear from him was the inclusion of the individual's knowledge as well, the tribal knowledge. That was the piece that was missing. And, when I look at these things, one of the things that we have and are working on is agentic digital twins. In other words, taking a digital twin, which is basically a mirror of what a piece of equipment is on the factory floor or the entire process, and then adding to that the notion that you can now take and go from what if, meaning simulation, all the way to what's next as you've put all of this data together. The inclusion of the tribal knowledge and the ability to inculcate the value that John was talking about as well, which is, as I said at the outset, incentivizing people, you giving them a different way to learn and to teach, meaning to impart their knowledge to Heather's point. This is all the capability that can be built into agentic AI because the agents can be differentiated by the task. Take the big process, break it down into smaller chunks, et cetera, et cetera. We've all heard about that. But it's what you do with each of those chunks that makes the difference on how productive the agentic system may be. In the case of a digital twin, you can actually take a visual image to what Martin was speaking of, see exactly where the problem is, see what's happening with it. I'm noticing the same thing is happening. My son is a master electrician. He's getting a lot of innovation in his trade where he can now use some of the more sophisticated tools on the market, not only to help him get to root cause analysis faster, but he can add his own perspective. Like, listen, I've run through, thousands of lines of code books. I've run through manufacturer's specifications. X does not work. Y is the fix because there's been an error in the documentation, or there's actually a better way to do it faster, cheaper, more successful in a particular situation. Those kinds of nuanced information are what is absolutely required going forward. How we institutionalize new knowledge, not standard operating procedure, but the changes of the standard operation needs to change as well. And the tools that we give people, whether it's, I know one company that we're working with where they're using 30-second video clips on TikTok. What did you fix today? What was the problem? How did you solve it? Impart your knowledge. And they have a contest going on where that's how they're using new technology, like video stories or storification, to get the knowledge out of their workforce. And the younger people may be more inclined to do that. The older people may want to sort of have it as a conversation where they're not being filmed. Audio, video, we don't need the physical piece of paper mentality or capability that we've had for too many generations because the original standard operating procedure is no longer the same. The documentation issue, whether you're using an AI tool to do it or not, is too much. And you don't necessarily need to know everything that's in that documentation to get to a root cause analysis and a fix. Time is what's important here. So the more we can impart that through, whether it's agentic AI or another form of AI, physics AI, for example, or math, we're ahead of the game. And those companies that start adopting that capability, they're the ones who are going to lead because they've taken into account that tribal knowledge or institutional knowledge is actually one of the most valuable assets of a corporation. It's time to treat that data as an asset.
Well said, Joanne. Joanne, you and Bob both mentioned standard operating procedures. And I think what we're really talking about here is dynamic work management. It's really,
Absolutely.
QuickBase has a lot of writing on this on their website. I think about weather factors, supply chain factors, people who should be in the office or at the field today who aren't there because of a personal issue, right? We tend to think standardization means, a nice straight line from point A to point Z and, a finite number of exceptions that we can manage to. What I think about today's world is lots of things can go wrong. Lots of things can surprise us today, and where our subject matter expertise comes in, and the antithesis to this is tribal knowledge is what to do when there's an ex when there's something you didn't expect. How do
Well,
we
this is,
go ahead?
sorry for interrupting you, Isaac. This is where, newer tools like knowledge graphs start to paint a much better picture. And I would say, as an example, something that we're working with at the moment is a business process that is multivariate, has all of the kind of complexity that you're discussing, weather factors, closed loop supply chains, open loop supply chains, remanufactured goods, greening, all of these capabilities coming together. Knowledge graphs is a way to paint that picture for people in a visual representation where they understand the what we couldn't understand from a standard operating procedure, which is not only the nuances, but also the dependencies and codependencies. And this is where I think all of, change that we're about to see, not only driven by AI, but just generally speaking, as a result of AI being part of our world now, is going to come into play. We're going to be much more aware of those cross dependencies, ways to reach, through silos and have a bigger picture to deal with.
Thank you, Joanne. Great, great comment stream happening here on LinkedIn Live. If you haven't said hello on the comment stream, do drop in and say hello to everybody. I want to thank Steve and David, a whole bunch of people who've been sharing their insights, some that I have put on the whiteboard that you see here. Joe, love to hear your thoughts on how we close the gap with tech and AI, and then we'll bring Bob on for some final recommendations. Hello, Joe.
I think Bob, Martin, and Joanne have all said very eloquently what I would say is documentation is not static. It's not a point in time. It's not a task. It's an ongoing effort with a continuous feedback loop, like many other systems. In the construction industry, electricians use a lockout tagout mechanism, right? And it's pilots use takeoff checklists. But those things are static. And when we can bring technology to bear on delivering that kind of knowledge and expertise about how to protect yourself and protect your customers, your passengers, and whatever it may be, when we can bring that in with real-time feedback, as Martin and Joanne have both suggested, that's when you start to really win. The companies won't win that have the best knowledge management systems. They'll be the ones that make tribal knowledge obsolete by making expertise ubiquitous.
Making expertise ubiquitous. Wow. What a leading statement for the age of AI, where we need to be able to ask the right questions, where we are going to use AR to bring more real-time relevant information in the field, where sharing is more important than doing at times. Bob, how do we get there?
Wow. I think we're all going to have to come back and rewatch this entire episode because of how many good points are kind of made across the board. And I think the real cost of tribal knowledge, right? I think really what we've been talking about, and there's a lot of impacts, it to me, I start thinking about the intersection of like workflow, person, and data. We talked about the culture, we talked about the operations and the tech side, where AI is going, and really how do we kind of move past the staticness of really it's taking too much time. And I've been watching the comments and tremendous comments there. And I think really at QuickBase, we can imagine a world of AI, not only for building applications that really match your workflows exactly and mining the data, but it should also be documenting itself so that you don't have to pull out a number two lead pencil and actually ask someone because of that change of culture of actually documenting is so tenuous and tedious to kind of move forward with. The system and AI should all be doing that all together so that the impact isn't taking 17 months to ramp somebody up or losing 3 months, I think, in terms of the if people leave, then that's going to be the impact to your process. So how do we move all that together into one Venn diagram so that we can help out the output? So I think it's exciting times ahead.
I thank you for that, Bob. I think most of the folks here know that I'm a big fan of QuickBase. I use it to run my own business. Every one of our coffee hour episodes, every one of the articles that I write ends up in a QuickBase database. It's how I manage my business. And, increasingly what I've been doing more with it is using it as a knowledge management tool, using it with AI, and to just be able to ask questions around, you know, simple things. What should I write about next? What should be our next coffee hours? And, you can't do that unless you have centralized knowledge, unless you have things really typed with strong metadata. And, at times being able to permission access to the information so the right people have access to it. So a lot of really good knowledge here. You mentioned we should go back and re-listen to this episode. This episode will be on my blog, drive.starcio.com/coffee. It will also be up on Apple and Spotify podcasts. It'll be about a week before we get it up there. This dashboard will be cleaned up, and you will see a blog post with me from me on Monday with some of the best practices here. So lots of really good knowledge here. Thank you, everybody who's been participating on the Common Stream, my speakers here. Bob, thank you for joining us from QuickBase. QuickBase is what they say to me. Say goodbye to workarounds and hello to workflows that work with QuickBase. Learn more at quickbase.com/solutions. If you ever want to see a demo of QuickBase, I have loads of them. Happy to show anybody who is interested in what it looks like in my world. Obviously, I don't work in the manufacturing or construction industry, but I've used those examples in some of my previous episodes. We talked about SaaS sprawl before, and lots of opportunities to use QuickBase to use to cement out field operations. Folks, thank you for joining this week. If you look in the top right-hand corner, I have the upcoming episodes for October up listening in there in our whiteboard. You can also see them on drive.starci.com/coffee. Thank you for participating this week. Everybody have a great weekend. And again, thank you, QuickBase, for sponsoring this episode. And thank you, Bob, for being our expert on this particular episode. Everybody have a great weekend.
Thank you, everybody.